there. I'm Wendy Garrett. This is Conscious Living on Empower Radio. Thanks for tuning in. I appreciate your time. Tons of stuff happening. It's like overload. So many things to pay attention to. And really the only thing that counts is your focus. Okay? So remember that as you are, you know, going to be distracted by some of the things that are coming down the pipe in a few months. The one thing I do want to just remind you of, if you miss any of these shows or any of the content or, you know, get distracted in the middle, you can always come back and check it out, Empower Radio, and Conscious Living is there. I also do some of these shows. I'll do a double, and I'll do another one on Wendy's Coffee House. And if you want to follow along on the blog, it's wendyscoffeehouse.com, okay? So a lot of extra material there. My guest today has a fabulous background in all sorts of things. Manifesting is her forte. And what she did was come up with a way to make it actually understandable, because I've dealt with people who, oh, you can manifest this, you know, you're going to go to Vegas and be a winner and all that. And this is something that there's a step-by-step process, a way that you're going to envision yourself that will really pay off in the long run. So we're going to take a few tips. She's got one book out now that's right now you can get. That's what I'm talking about, Be a Genie. And another one, multidimensional working here. This next book is Waking Up in 5D. You've heard 5D, you know, that I've been talking about this for years. Well, this is how it works. And she'll talk about that, the intro to the next book that's going to be available, I think, August. Pre-orders are out now. Maureen St. Germain, my guest. Hi, Maureen. I'm really looking forward to talking to you.
I am delighted to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm looking forward to understanding how you put this all together. It was kind of like you were in crunch time, the Be a Genie, and you just, out of the blue, things just kept happening. And that's what's so phenomenal about this. So if you could kind of give us an overview of how this came into being.
Well, first of all, I started out with manifestation, like lots of people, and I just had a interest in it and a desire to use these techniques. I felt in my heart that they were a good idea. But I also hung out in the corporate world with lots and lots of people who were very linear in their thinking. And so as I meditated, I looked for a linear way to prove manifestation works, and also to establish a linear method that a person who is very linear, you know, working in black and white stuff all day long, could use and still join forces with that esoteric side of esoterically manifesting things that you really desire and want.
And your career, you've had a varied career. You work with basically publicity, and you have done television. You've done some traveling. You're pretty versatile in terms of meeting a wide variety of people who would be creative, maybe in different ways, visual or, you know, I hear something, I remember, I see it, you know, those kinds of ways of putting things together. And I think with this Be a Genie, it gave people a little bit more of a playful aspect where you're working with this sense of, I don't know, a little bit more enthusiasm and less meticulous and perfectionistic. It's like, okay, let's see what happens.
Well, you know, that's a very good point, because unlike a lot of manifestation teachers, I teach not to focus on the precise thing you want, but to focus on what it will do for you and how you're going to feel. So rather than manifest the car of your dreams, maybe it's an SUV that can carry the kids, but it doesn't have to be a Jeep Cherokee. Maybe it's something else. So you tell the universe, I need a car. I see myself in a car that carries the dog food, carries the dog and the kids, and it's a good, safe car for me to drive.
And it's a bargain. And it's a bargain. I'll throw that in.
Yeah, as a bargain. Or, you know, that I can pay for, or that's paid for. Because, you know, people have friends that give them cars. You know, I know plenty of people who had a family member or a good friend say, look, you know, I'm going to get a new car. I don't really need this car. You know, I'll sell it to you for $200 or something ridiculous. And it's just because they want to help you out and because they're going to get another car anyway. So the idea of, well, I'm afraid of car payments is a very important piece. So instead of being afraid of the car payments, you just say, okay, then the car I'm going to get is already paid for. And it doesn't mean that I'm going to have to pay for it. It just means it's paid for. And it could mean that I'll get an inheritance that I can pay cash. Who knows? But the idea is that you see yourself driving the car, not just manifesting this beautiful car and talking about the car and seeing the car, but being seen in the car by someone who knows you and knows your car. And when they notice you're in a different car and they say to you, gosh, you must be driving a loaner. Is yours in the shop again? You can smile and say, actually, no, this is my new car. And even if it's not a brand new car, it's your new car and you're able to validate it. Now, what happens when you hold in your awareness, in your mind movie, as I call it, movie of the mind, that you already are sharing about the car and someone's noticing and commenting, that feedback makes you feel so positive that it becomes real. And there's all kinds of studies that prove an imagined outcome becomes real. But it's the emotional response when someone you know tells you how fantastic that is that you have this car. It does something inside of you. And I'll play with you if you want. If you want to manifest something, I'll show you what I mean.
Oh, geez. Okay. I hadn't thought about what I wanted to manifest. A house by the lake. How's that?
See, how do we do that? If you had a house by the lake, what celebration would you have there after you had it for a while?
Oh, darn. It's a celebration just to be there. So I'm just thinking, and I would have a celebration at the end of the first month saying, thank you for allowing me to be in a sacred space at a sacred time in a beautiful area that I am, you know, feeling 100% fulfilled. And
And you're celebrating the fact that you have the house. Who's going to come to this celebration?
God.
All right. You have to understand that when you have a observer that you know and trust share with you and give you feedback, it's more believable. Think about the people who have said to you, you know, you have an amazing show. I'm so impressed what you've created. It sings inside of you. So think of someone that you would be sharing your space with, even if it's just for that moment, whether they're over for tea or whether they're staying there for the weekend, it doesn't matter. Pick someone in your mind's eye and make it somebody that's in your life that you know would come.
The only person I ever, ever want to impress is my mom. So it would be my mom.
Okay. So you have your mom over. And does your mother give you good feedback?
Yes.
Okay. So
I'm over
and you say to her, I've got a surprise for you. I'm going to take you on a little trip. Make sure you pack this and this, but I'm not telling you anything else. Are you likely to give her the ride, or is she going to show up on her own?
She will show up.
Okay. So then after you tell her the surprise, then you say, here's the address. It'll take you, you know, whatever, an hour to get there, whatever it takes.
She'll love it. Yeah, she'll love it.
And, you know, plan accordingly. So
yeah.
She shows up and she says, wow, you know, you must have some pretty good friends that have loaned you their summer house. And you can say, yeah, actually, I own this place. I have this place.
I'm feeling it already.
And what would she say in return?
I'm so glad. When can I come stay over?
You just missed the cue. We're role playing. Now, I'm going to be the teacher here and say, I just gave you the setup. I told you that you've told her to come. She shows up. She looks at you and says, this is a beautiful place. You must have some good friends that let you stay here.
Uh-huh.
And you say, actually, it's
Mama.
My place.
Mom, I own it. Mm-hmm.
I own it. And what does she say?
She says, I'm so proud of you.
And
she'll
say, when can I come back again? Or I wasn't planning on staying very long, but next time I will, or something like that. What would she say?
I told you what she would say immediately. She would say, when can I come back and visit? When can I stay?
When can I come back? In other words, she's there now. But if she's there visiting now, why would she say it that way? That's what I didn't get.
Oh, because my mom's always planning 10 things in advance. My mom is like oh my gosh.
Okay, very good.
I don't have enough time in the day.
You're showing her around.
Yes.
So what I'm looking for from you, what I'm looking for from you is validation in the moment that she loves it now, and then she would invite herself for another trip.
Okay. So she's going to take...
Here's the thing. This is what everyone does, not just you, Wendy. Mm-hmm. Everyone does what I will call, they go to the wall and they look at it. So you're already imagining your mom's going to want to come rather than being in the moment, receiving her at your front door.
Okay. Okay.
So you're showing her around and she's going to say something like, wow, good thing I'm planning on spending the night, or something outrageously funny because she loves you and she supports you. And you know, whatever she's going to say, but it's a validation in this moment that it's yours and it's coming from her, not you.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's what we do. So in the movie of the mind, you want to redo that. And just one more time, just take yourself through that. What would she say as she says, you know, you must have some pretty good friends to let you stay in a nice place like this. And your response is,
oh, Mom, I own it. I didn't want to tell you. I wanted to be, this would be a surprise. So you would, you know, for once have no clue what I was up to.
And she says what? What does she say in response?
You got me on this one.
Very cool. All right. That's what you want to hear in your mind's eye. And you got me on this one. And, you know, I'm thinking I got some friends I want to come back with. Or something, you know, she sounds like she's a real planner. And so that part's going to follow. But first, you're going to give her the news and hear her response. And the, I'm so proud of you. And, you know, I always knew you wanted something like this. That's so cool. I'm so happy for you. You want to hear that firsthand validation from someone that you know will give you that reinforcement in the moment that proves it's already yours. And what that does is anchor it into a version of the reality, because we all are living in more than one version of the reality. We just didn't know it. And the way to allow yourself to do this is to imagine when you're in the movies, you suspend disbelief. So when Wonder Woman, you know, does something amazing but scary, you're gasping. Or if there's a funny scene in a movie, you laugh because you're in the thick of it. You are the protagonist. And so we allow ourselves to suspend disbelief. So this is a way in to allow your mind to accept the possibility that there's more than one version of the reality. And oh, by the way, there is. And we are funding all of the versions of the reality, the road not taken and the road taken. So why not fund a version of the reality that's in the future that proves we already have our heart's desire?
And see, that I think is what I missed from a lot of these other manifestation processes. Is that thing of...
They don't have it.
Immersion. Yeah, it's immersion.
Right. They don't have it. Nobody has the conversation. And the conversation is something that I figured out because I, you know, as a mystic, I was getting information that there's more than one version of the reality. As a mystic, I was observing myself in other versions of the reality. The version of me that didn't get divorced. The version of me that did get divorced. And when I asked what was going on, I was shown that I was funding it, like, you know, putting money into it, putting energy into it, because I had so much guilt about, you know, having children and wanting them to have their father in the house. And he had guilt because of some of the things that went down. And so we both had regrets. We were both funding it. So it's pretty visible to me because I'm sensitive. And then as our guilt, you know, abated and we became less self-critical of ourselves, we funded it less and less, so that version of the reality ceased to exist. So
that's a great way to put it.
Yeah, what happens with people is every time you make a decision, you're bifurcating and you're taking both decisions. And what you're doing is putting most of your attention and your energy on one. And the other version does take off, and it is funded as long as you have an energy to fund it. And I'll give you an example. If you look at your life and then you look back in time to when you applied to a college, maybe you applied to more than one. So first you're imagining you might go to this college, and then you're imagining you might go to that college. But at some point you made a decision and you let the other one go. And then maybe once you start at the new college, you know, there's some things that go wrong. You have what I call buyer's remorse. And everybody goes through that. You know, oh, gosh, I wonder if I made the right decision. And then you start fantasizing again about the place you didn't pick. Again, you're funding it. And then you finally settle into the place you're at and you're happy. Or you decide, I'm going to transfer and go to the college I wished I had chosen. Whatever you choose, then what happens is that becomes the main thing. And that's why our physics tells us it is the observed outcome that is real. And it is also why physics tells us that every version of the reality exists. Now, I, as a mystic, I will tell you, it's not every version. In other words, it's not unlimited. It's only limited by the expressions that we have. So if you have two choices and you're only thinking of two choices, then that's the only possibilities that are going to show up as alternate versions.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Your imagination isn't invested in it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really powerful. And so one of my favorite examples, of course, is when someone wants to manifest their beloved. And the classic example is you play with me, you be somebody who wants to manifest a beloved. What is it that proves that you are happily with your beloved?
I've done this before. I've done this before.
And the answer is?
Well, there will be a sign. And it was one point that he would touch me on the back of my waist. And when he put his arm on my waist, I would feel that. And then that was it. That was the one that...
like that one.
It worked.
Did it? Well, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, it worked.
I'm glad it worked for you. What I recommend for people is to see themselves celebrating an anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be the anniversary of when we met, the anniversary when we moved in together, the anniversary we got married, whatever it is, some anniversary. And you don't even need to know which anniversary it is. You don't need to know what year it is. You don't need to know what kind of anniversary. You're just celebrating, and we're happy we met. And you're sharing... whether it's a glass of water that you're clinking glasses or champagne, but you're making that toast that I am so happy. Now, I will tell you one time when I was in Spain and this family was in deep trouble as a couple, and they had sponsored me and they loved me dearly. And the wife said to me, you know, teach my son, Thibaut, how to manifest. So I use that as an example because he was, you know, maybe 13 or 14, old enough to, you know, start to think about those kinds of things. And I said to him, so what proves that you are happy with your, that you're with your beloved? And he said, you get a divorce. Because in his world, even though his parents were a very good match for each other, they were at each other's throat, and they needed to get a divorce. And so he saw that, and that would be what would happen. Once you found somebody and lived with them for a while, then you'd end up getting a divorce, because that's what his parents did.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I always say it isn't enough just to have this person, you know, touch you and you would know that that's the one, because that doesn't include all the stuff that it make life rich and important to you. You know, what do you care about and things like that. And so that's why if you're celebrating, it's proof positive, because if you were married to someone and it was only okay, you might not want to celebrate. You see?
Yeah.
And lots of people do get married. And then later think, oh, I didn't marry the best choice, or I wish this person were different. You know, they're stuck somehow in some way. And that's why I always include the happiness part. And this, by the way, goes back to the book. Remember you said how everything came together with the book? Well, it didn't come together the way everyone thinks it does, because I manifested a 3-book deal with Hampton Roads Publishing. They're the people who did Conversations with God. They're a big outfit. They now have been bought out. Yeah. But at the time, I wanted to manifest a 2-book deal or better. And I signed a contract with them for 3 books and submitted my manuscripts. And they were supposed to pay me my advance. And the bookkeeping department kept actually telling me that my advance was in the mail. After 6 months, the president of the company told me they were going to drop my books. And apparently they had gotten into some kind of financial trouble. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they had an expansion on the horizon that didn't, you know, pan out.
Right.
And I got shoved off the table, and it was easy because it was 3 books. And I remember saying to my book agent, now I can't say I manifested a 3-book deal. And he said, Maureen, you did manifest a 3-book deal. I have a signed contract.
Right, right. Uh-huh.
So it isn't enough to manifest a 3-book deal in my case. So I examined what was it that I really wanted. And what I really wanted was to reach thousands of people and teach them how to manifest with grace and ease and then prove it scientifically. And that's the second half of the book, using the sacred geometry and showing how source code for the universe will show you how to manifest.
Okay, yeah, and you get into that by you saying, do you want to manifest by default or design?
Yeah. Yeah, because, people who are into sacred geometry will be able to follow this, but I believe that phi, or this magic number that's the relationship between the bones of the body, and it's found in how flowers and all kinds of plants grow, this number called phi, which is a Greek name for a relationship, so it's not a real number, it's a relationship, mm-hmm. that's source code for how everything creates. And you can find that relationship in the spiral of a nautilus. And you can find it in lots of places. And because of that, I show a backwards way I take that information and back engineer it, if you will.
Part of that, though, I mean, I'm going to get out of that part of it. And when you're manifesting and the things that fall through the cracks because of the worry, and you talk about this in the book with one of the examples where the boy is manifesting the concert tickets and mom tells him, because she went to one of your classes, how to do it. And then she also says, now tell everybody what you're manifesting. And you're saying, no, don't do that. You know, what?
Yeah, the mom didn't tell him to do it that way. He decided to do that.
Okay. Okay.
He was so, you remember an 11-year-old, mom is the goddess, you know? And so if his mom said he was going to get the tickets because this is how he's going to manifest them, and he has seen her manifest other stuff, it doesn't occur to him that nobody else in the world has done that. Mm-hmm. And so he went and told his friends he was going to go to the concert. You know, I'm going too. And then right away, well, do you have tickets? No. And everyone laughed at him.
Mm-hmm.
And he came home crying, and she said, well, don't tell anybody else. And then he had to go back and do some more work. But the innocence of the child was, in her case, see yourself at the concert and see yourself showing your friends the tickets the next day, which is what he did.
Well, I also like the fact that there were a couple of stoppers in there that it might not have panned out. And he kept reframing it, which is what you say is, okay,
exactly.
You know, keep reframing it. That even though that outcome doesn't immediately manifest, and it looks like, because I think at one point, the station was giving away tickets. You had to show up at this place to get the tickets. And then they gave me all the tickets and he didn't get any. And he was floored. I was like, well, everything worked. I kept getting it. And then one of the people who happened to show up and won the tickets said, you want them more than I do. Here are the tickets.
Yeah. Pretty amazing.
So and that's what I like about your stuff, is because you also talk people through the false positives.
This is mathematically defined on the other side in the second half of the book, and I'll explain that in a second. But what happens is, if we decide that's the one, that's why I said I didn't like your version of how you manifested your beloved, because just because somebody, you know, was able to reach you emotionally when they touched you, mm-hmm. maybe it wouldn't work out, or maybe something would happen. But when you manifest the outcome that has staying power and is the outcome that's going to give you the thing you want, what happens is you're going to get curveballs. And if we humans want to solve things, you know, if it's cold, I'll get up and close the window. That's one way to get warm. But I could also put on a sweater, or I could also turn on the heat. So there's more than one way to solve a problem. So what happens is, when we're trying to manifest and we think we have the solution, the mistake we make is thinking that that's it. That's what's going to happen. You know, I don't know if I wrote about this in the beginning of the book, but early on in my manifestation work, I needed an extra $100. I was a newlywed. I was way back in the 70s, and I wanted to manifest an extra $100, and I had a pickup job that I would get because I was a manager of an apartment building, and occasionally they'd have me paint an apartment. And so I needed this $100 for a very specific reason. I saw myself using the money for what it was intended. I got all that part down. And then I kept seeing that I would get this pickup job to cover that. Well, I didn't get the pickup job, but somebody handed me $100.
Oh, darn. Yeah.
And that was the first time, that was the biggest aha in this work, because it occurred to me at that moment, you do not have to know how. And if you right. think you know the how, back off of it. Because if you put all your energy in one of the hows, and that one falls through, like, the, you know, winning the tickets, then you would like go into depression. But instead, if you have put all your energy into this how, into the beloved, and that beloved doesn't work out for whatever reason, you don't stay with that idea that it's that guy, it's got to be that guy. Instead, you say, you know what? I will have my outcome. There must be some piece that I don't know. There must be somebody even better than this guy. So much better that I'll forget this guy.
Okay, we're going to have to take a break in the middle of a guy thing here. And we'll come right back. But what we're going to do is continue manifesting, and this is the Be a Genie book, okay, the handbook. So if you're following along, the Be a Genie, Create Love, Success, and Happiness with Maureen St. Germain. And you can do that. And that we're going to ask the universe, why not? I'm worth it. Why not? Up next, more manifesting, and maybe the guy will be in there too.
This is the news. This morning, we are saluting the 2.2 million women who have joined in the war effort. They now make up 37% of the workforce, changing their role forever.
The prestigious Harvard Medical School is breaking ground today, opening its doors to new female applicants.
Today, little girls all over the world look to the sky, where the first woman is now in space.
Military stereotypes are challenged today with the trailblazing promotion of a U.S. female officer to four-star general. It was just announced that the vast majority of last year's doctorate degrees were earned by women.
We've come so far, but our news is changing for the worse. More women die from heart disease and stroke than men, even though it can be prevented. Make a change at GoRedForWomen.org today. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the American Heart Association's Go Red for Women.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm going to keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
So, I'm a dog, and I just got adopted by this new human guy, and I'm starting to wonder how he got along without me. I mean, okay, something as simple as walking around the block. He's got this leash thing, and he puts me on one end and him on the other, and I'm just taking him around. I think he's afraid of getting lost. Without that leash and me guiding him along, I don't think he'd find his way back home. But it's kind of cute.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Think you could easily get to your family if a disaster struck right now? Think you can wing it during an emergency because you're a New Yorker? Most parents don't realize that protecting your family starts long before an actual disaster strikes. It starts today by being prepared and making a plan.
To learn how, take our readiness challenge at nyc.gov/readynewyork or call 311 for information. In this online tool, you'll be faced with real-life challenges, teaching you the importance of being prepared for a disaster.
Brought to you by the New York City Office of Emergency Management and the Ad Council.
Conscious Living and Power Radio. Hi there, I'm Wendy, and my guest, Maureen St. Germain. It was so funny because as you're going through this stuff about the sequence and talking about what I was on the blog was the Phoenix sequence, I'm like, oh, this is what you were talking about. Same thing. I happened to pick that up with the system that you were, you know, mentioning, the Merkaba and all that. And I'm okay. So that's something I would like you to explain a little bit more, because this is still, I think, a little bit esoteric and not, it's not in the general, I guess, we don't talk about this stuff all the time. All right. So how does that work? That little thing that you were talking about that was at the basis of everything, the sacred geometry.
Yes. Well, even though people aren't paying attention to it now, they will, because sacred geometry and symmetry in mandalas and everything are coming back into awareness, and people are, you're seeing more mandala art, you're seeing more paying attention to that. So there is this relationship. And it's very cool, because one of the things I point out is that there's two kinds of numbers in the world. There's a whole number, like you and I might call 2 or 5 or 8 or 52. And then there's a relationship number. And the one relationship number that everybody knows is pi, which is 3.14. And it has to do with the relationship between a radius and a circumference, or the radius of a circle and its area. And even if you don't remember that it was 3.14, you remember learning about it, because we all learned about it in fifth grade. And architects use it, builders use it, you know, guys that do HVAC use it. I mean, practically everybody in any trade uses that formula, and we're familiar with it. But what we haven't really thought about is 3.14 is an approximation, because it's a relationship. It is not a true number, because a number is to define something. I mean, the whole reason for a number was for trade. Numbers came into being because I've got 5 sheep and you've got, you know, 2 cows, and we're going to trade for each other. So what is this relationship? This relationship is a contrast between 2 numbers to try and produce a third number that shows how these 2 are related. So you could say that the radius is approximately 3 times less or more than the circumference, for example. And that's the 3.14. And so you begin to understand that. Now, if you look at your little finger, the distance between the top of your little finger and the wrist, take that length and then expand your range from the top of the little finger to the base of your hand. That's a relationship known as phi, P-H-I. And that relationship is found in the Great Pyramid. It's found in the Parthenon. It's found all over Washington, D.C. and Memphis, as the builders knew these codes. It is found in plants and how they grow. For example, I grew roses for a long time as one of my hobbies. And I learned that roses first throw one leaf, then they throw a stem with 2 leaves, then they throw a stem with 3 leaves, and then they throw a fiber. And after the 5-leaf stem comes a bud. So if you have, you know, tea roses in your garden and you want to get the most buds you can, you always leave a 5-leaf stem on the bush when you cut the rose. You can have a 5-leaf stem on the stem that you cut, as long as there's one left behind, because the rose is always making sure it's safe with the fiber. Mm-hmm. To produce another flower. Now, how is that related to sacred geometry? Well, it turns out that there's a sequence called the Phoenix, or the Fibonacci sequence, 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8. And what that is a series of numbers that you add the adjacent pairs, so 3 and 5 are 8, 8 and 5 are 13, 13 and 5 are 21, and so on. Well, it turns out if you keep going, you go up to a few more times and you divide those 2 numbers, and you get this phi ratio, this magic formula that's a relationship. Now, let's go back to the idea of creation. If there's 2 kinds of creation, that explains the male and femaleness. So there's rational numbers, that's the whole numbers, and then there's irrational numbers. Those are the numbers that don't resolve, that carry a leftover over and over. So I always tease people and say, you know, the next time a guy calls you irrational, you can say, thank you, that's half the universe of all the numbers out there. And oh, by the way, it's indicative of who we are, because, you know, a woman can bring home a rose, let's say, and put it in a vase and just say, well, the vase is dirty, let me wash the vase, put it back in the vase, put it on the coffee table needs dusting, puts it on the coffee table and looks around and goes, you know what, that rose would look so much better if I had different throw pillows. Let me get some new throw pillows. She gets new throw pillows. She's looking around. Let's get a different carpet. And so she gets a different carpet, and it goes on and on and on. She can always find one more thing to adjust, just like irrational numbers, because irrational numbers are not numbers. They're a relationship. And once we begin to understand that, we can begin to see that this is how manifestation occurs in nature, and it's source code for everything. Now, how is this related back to this whole idea of, you know, don't mess with your outcome, don't let other stuff, you know, solve it? When you add up those numbers of 1, 2, 3, 5, 8 like that, you're not putting anything else into that sequence. You're not throwing in extra numbers. Just like if you're manifesting a beloved and the man you think you're going to be with doesn't work out, you haven't put all your energy into that one. You've put all your energy into the outcome. I am happy. We're living together and, you know, it's working out. We're celebrating. So you eliminate all those extraneous things that people do, because everyone does the yes, but. You know, the first thing I hear when a woman's trying to manifest a beloved is, well, there's not that many good men. And I joke and say, yeah, but you only need one.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is, when you have the science behind it, then this business of self-doubt doesn't have a place, doesn't have any place to go. And so it's easily dismissed. The self-doubt is easily dismissed. If, on the other hand, you've had only bad experiences with men, you might say all men are dogs, or whatever you might say. And the idea is that you can't see somebody that would fit that because you have no history of that. But if you allow yourself to have a version of the reality where you are happy, and maybe you don't know what that looks like, so you hang out with friends that are happy, and you learn from them. What is it like? So the math behind it is for those linear types that are always going to give you a yes, but. And if you don't worry about yes, but, then you don't need that stuff. And you can just read the first half of the book and be just fine.
The manifestation, I like the first half of the book.
Yeah.
I'm one of those. The first half of the book is, but, you know, that's the thing. Each person does this their own unique way, and having that other aspect gives it a little bit more depth and a little more dimension. And for somebody else, maybe a little more of a linear factor that they need to make it real.
That's right. That's right. And for me, it became irrefutable that this is how the universe creates. If this is how roses grow, and they always produce a flower after five, and then we divide, you know, five, eight into five, or five into eight, either way, and you get, you know, 1.618, which is the phi ratio formula, you begin to see that everything that manifests is produced this way. So what you're doing is you're harmonizing yourself in a relationship with the present that you offer no resistance to, and an outcome in the future that makes you even happier. So let's say you're in a job you don't like, but you want to be in a job you love. Then what you do is you focus on the job that you love. Then you have a run-in with your boss. You go, I hate this guy. So now you have to erase that with two positives. And there's another piece to quantum physics that helps kind of underscore this. A lot of people don't know how noise-canceling headphones work, but they actually work by antidoting an offending sound. Well, they can't antidote the offending sound until it's heard. So whether it's a jet engine or a lawnmower, the equipment records the sound wave, inverts it, and then syncs it with the sound that comes after. And that's how noise-canceling headphones work. So they're canceling the sound after the sound has been noted, for example. So you note that you have an attitude about your boss, and then you follow it with two or three or more positives that antidote that negative. So it might be, well, they pay me well, a great vacation, and a good medical plan. Thank you very much. And you deliberately seed the universe with enough positives that the negative you seeded doesn't matter. It's
right.
Been antidoted. Uh-huh. And that's the most important thing I think I can tell people. I have never been able to stop thinking a negative thought before I thought it. I can only recognize a negative thought after it's been thought. And mm-hmm. once it's been recognized, it's too late. It's already been thought.
Mm-hmm.
Better that I follow it with two positives to antidote it, and then it's handled, And then I can go on and think of some more positives and manifest my heart's desire. Most of the time, when we don't manifest something, it isn't because we're not manifestors. It's because we're doing a big takeaway. Can you imagine? You're in a restaurant. You order your meal. Then you see the person next to you get their meal. It looks pretty good. You grab your waiter and say, you know what? I changed my mind. I want what they're having. And the waiter says, okay, no problem. And he goes in the kitchen. He changes your order. Then you see somebody on the other side. They get, oh, that looks even better. Call your waiter back. Pretty soon the waiter's going to say, you know what, lady? When you make up your mind, I'll turn in your order. I'm going to cancel everything. And mm-hmm. So the universe is doing the same thing. Every time we say, oh, you know, I want a job that I love, oh, but I hate this job, universe is going to give me more of, I hate this job, because that's all I put my energy on. But if I see myself in a job that I don't like, and then I focus on all the good stuff that I do like about it, and then I go over here and I think about a job that I want to be in a job where everyone loves me and I love them, and we all appreciate each other so much that it's enjoyable to go to work. I look forward to going to work. Then I'm going to get that because I'm manifesting both. I'm putting out both. And remember, humans are capable of holding more than one version of the reality. We're already doing it when we go to the movies. We may as well do it on purpose.
We're going to jump to a different topic because I want to get time to get your book in here, the new one, Waking Up in 5D. Okay, so that was Be a Genie. And it's a little bit of that's going to go right into Waking Up in 5D. But this is something that took you 5 years because it kept talking about the jumping, starting. And what happened there?
No, that was the Be a Genie book. The Be a Genie book.
Wait, okay, that was
wait, five years. The reason that Waking Up, maybe I'm a 5-year book person, who knows? I don't think so because not all my books have taken that long. But in the case of Waking Up in 5D, this is a book about the reality that we are manifesting right now. And, you know, sometimes we hear a spiritual teacher say that when we become 5D, and my premise is that many of us are already waking up in 5D, and many of us can choose to wake up in 5D. And what that does is gives you tools so that you can be proactively choosing how you interact with people and how you can understand that you've already been in 5D. And I'll give you an example that shows how you've already been in 5D. Have you ever had something in your hand and you come in your home and you put it down and you walk away, maybe you stuck it in a drawer and then you go do something else. And then later you think, you know what, I'm going to need those sunglasses or whatever it was. I'm going to go back out. So you go back in the drawer and they're not there. And you empty everything out of the drawer, not there. Close the drawer, okay, fine, I'll use my spare. You go dig out your spare from another spot, put them on, you go for your walk, you come back, you're in a blissful state, you've been outside again, Mother Nature, you open that drawer, and there's the sunglasses, exactly where you left them. This is because when you put the sunglasses down, you were in that higher vibe state, 5D, and then when you're in a, I'll call it busy state or mentally frantic state, looking for the sunglasses, you drop down into a lower vibration and you can't see them. So from 5D, you can see into 3D. 5D and 3D look very similar. Now, when this happened to me the first few times, and it happened a lot for like a year, every time something disappeared, I would ask, where's my stuff? And I would always be told it's in a higher dimension. And I would say, you know, I had kids, so the obvious answer to that is, well, I want it back. Thank you. And of course, it would come back. And one day, I had an experience with one of my sons that totally blew me out of the water. Now, keep in mind, I've been a spiritual teacher all this time, teaching in workshops. My teenage son, the 16-year-old, comes in, puts something in his book bag, throws it on the floor, comes in the kitchen, gives me some big story, and says, here, Mom, I'll tell you what I'm talking about. And then he goes back to his book bag, reaches in the top, and it's not there. He gets a wild look on his face. And he said, Mom, it's not here. By now, he's pulling everything out. And without even realizing, I'm not in a classroom, but I'm in my own home, and I'm in a safe environment. I said, oh, honey, it's probably in a higher dimension. We'll just ask for it to come back. Why don't you come back in the kitchen and finish your story, and then we'll go back and look for it again. So, you know, I'm sure he was rolling his eyes, you know, 16, right? Comes back in the kitchen, finishes the story, and we're in a nice, yummy place again. And he goes back and looks. There it is, right where he left it. And that's when I knew I wasn't making it up.
Part of that has to do with having that objective observer, which that's what he was doing right there. He was giving you a neutral.
That's right. That's right. So up until that time, as a mystic, I knew it was true, but I was not really willing to, I'll say, own it. Now,
right.
In the meantime, I was telling my students, you know, if your stuff disappears, just ask for it to come back. I knew it was something mystical. Now, at the time, this is kind of funny. This goes back to, you know, how do you solve getting warm in a room with the window open? Yeah. It goes back to that. How do you solve this problem? When I asked where my stuff was, I was trying to solve the problem from the vantage point of where's my stuff? All of the interview questions, who, what, why, when, where, and how, except what? Ask a narrow band so that you can use your information to solve it. Where's my stuff in the fourth dimension? Oh, well, I'm going to go get it, let's say. Or if it's, you know, in the garage, I'll go get my scissors. When you ask what's going on, and this is something, again, that I began teaching the students because of some mystical experiences I had around this concept, suddenly the whole story comes out. And I was told, Maureen, you were in the higher dimension when you set it down. And that's when I began to understand that if I'm doing it, so are you. So is everybody else.
Uh-huh.
You know, when I'm in an audience, even today, I'll ask, you know, how many people have had an incident like this? You know, 70% of the hands go up because everybody's having these experiences because we're all slipping into that higher vibrational state. Another way to know you're in that higher vibrational state is when you're in a heavy emotion. And so now we're talking 3D to 5D. What happened to 4D? And the answer is fourth dimension is a portal. It is a way to get to 5D really fast, but you don't want to stay there. So I joke around in New York. I say, you'd never go to Grand Central Station to spend the night. You go there because you want to go somewhere else. It's a portal.
Mm-hmm.
Or an airport would be the same.
Yeah.
So fourth dimension is a zone of movement. It's high energy, and it also has polarity. So sometimes you get stuck in a vortex. That's when people get into these crying jags, or they go into emotional lows, and also this high-low thing that happens that's often called bipolar. It's you're in that fourth-dimensional space of lots of emotion, either high or low. What happens is when you slip into 5D, then you're stabilized again, and you don't have polarity. So one of the ways you know you're in polarity is when you don't mind what other people do. And a classic example of that is when you first fall in love, you know, if you're driving your car and somebody pulls in front of you, you don't mind. If you're in line to get on a train and somebody, you know, rushes in front of you, when you're in love, you're just so happy all the time, nobody can touch it. And so you think, well, you know, go ahead. Maybe you need to go ahead. You don't get into it. So what is happening is in 5D, we're moving to a place where we're aware of the other person to such a degree that we don't need to have anything over them. So it's kind of like if you're going to make a deal with someone, you want that deal to be good for both parties. You're not satisfied. You know, like if I'm going to, you know, make a contract with you, I want to find a way that you're going to be as happy with the contract as I am. And if you're not going to be happy, if you're not going to make sure I'm happy, you know, you want to have the upper hand, then it's not a good contract for 5D. And I only am interested in 5D contracts now. And I'll tell you a funny story about a guy at work that really underscores this. He had a yummy sports car. He's an older man. He had a lot of money. And his son had just finished law school and was starting out on his own and wanted another car. He was ready for a car for work. And so his dad was selling his car. And the dad's thinking he's going to trade it in and get a new car and get a lot of money for the, you know, the sports car that isn't that old and isn't that used. Meanwhile, the son's got his eye on that car, and he's thinking, I'm going to buy it from my dad, and I'm going to get a good price. So the two of them negotiate, and the dad finally relents and gives the car to the son for the price he was wanting to pay instead of, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 more than what he was hoping to get. He's telling this story at work, and he's kind of like being rueful that he let the car go for so little. And I looked at him and I said, just think how proud you would have been of your son if he'd gotten that deal on your car from somebody else. And he looked at me and his eyes got really big and then he burst out laughing. And he said, you're right. And that's where we're coming from. And we're going to the place where the son would say, Dad, you know, it's hard for me to pay, but, you know, if you really think you need to get more money, I'll commit to it. You know, and they'd find that middle ground where they would both feel good.
What I have a question is, what dimension do we dream in?
Six.
Okay, so we're playing with things up there so we can bring them up to that level.
That's right, and vice versa. We're playing things up in that area so that we can bring them down.
Okay.
Where we are. And, you know, another thing that I learned, and this is also something that's in the book, it's also in one of my other books, is this idea when you're in meditation, and lots of people do meditation, they do quiet meditation, and then maybe somebody's leading it, and they're maybe doing singing or toning or, you know, whatever, some sound, something else is going on that's part of the meditation. And you're with people, and, you know, the meditation ends, and you open your eyes and, you know, the friend you're with says, you know, you were sleeping and you're embarrassed, you know, and you think to yourself, how could I have fallen asleep? You know, there was such a nice meditation. In truth, you didn't fall asleep. What happens is the body elemental, the part of you that runs your body systems, shuts down everything it can so that as much of your consciousness as possible can move into this higher place up to the eighth dimension. And from that point on, there is no connection. So it's like you sitting in the subway next to somebody who speaks a language that is so foreign to you, you could not possibly make any sense out of it. You know, maybe, I don't know, Russian or something that would be, or Chinese maybe, you know, it's just so different from what we know. You couldn't even make any sense out of it at all. And it's not that you're not hearing it. You're hearing it loud and clear.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not able to transpose it. So what happens is when we do those kinds of meditations, we're pulling in from very high places, we're pulling in energetic information, and then it's anchoring in our field, and when we're ready, it unpacks in a way that we can understand it and we can begin to operate it. So the cool thing about waking up in 5D is that when you understand what's really going on and that we're already moving interdimensionally right now where we're at, it's a huge aha, and we don't have to wait for some, quote, big event that we're almost a little afraid of. And instead, we can say, I'll be ready when it happens because I'm already sliding into 5D. And it's a bit like, you know, a dry run. You're doing it and holding that space. And what I believe will happen is that when Mother Earth has enough of us that are able to maintain that space, then she'll flip. In an instant, it will take everyone else with us, kind of like a teeter-totter. So we all get to go.
Cats are already there. Let me share you. We're about 4 minutes. Let me share you. About 2 years ago, maybe 2013, I walked by the living room. I'm walking from the kitchen to the hallway, the living room in between, off to my left. My cat is in the chair. She's looking at me. She's standing, looks like almost at the top of the chair, and I see this. I see her face. She's calico. Looks beautiful. She's got this green collar on with a pink heart. And I think, gosh, I need to go back and get the camera and take her picture because this is like the most perfect picture. I'm just, oh, wow. I'm walking down the hall and thinking, where's the camera? And I realize my cat does not wear a collar. She refuses to wear a collar. I go back to the room. Sure enough, she's not in the chair in that position. She's in the chair a little further down. That could not have been the pose that she had. But in that moment, it was so real and so fresh and so physical that I thought that that's what she was doing. And I realized I had slipped into a different dimension. I just don't know which one it was. Does that make sense? Well, that was quick. Okay. So now we slipped into a different dimension. And Maureen did too at the very same time. It's like, whoa. All right. Maureen St. Germain. You can check out. Are you back?
Yeah. I muted the phone because I had a cough. I'm sorry. I didn't realize it was still muted. Yes, you know.
I do that too.
The cat and you momentarily were aligned in 5D. And in that moment, 3D and 5D looked almost the same. And this is why we don't notice until hindsight, until we come back into 3D and we say, whoa, what was that? And where we're going is to that blissful place all the time.
See, that was what's fantastic. I'm like, what the heck? I knew it had happened. I'm just like, okay, I just decided from then on, cats are multidimensional. That's all there is to it. She took me to her level, and I was just going to have to figure out how to deal with it.
Well, and cats are very interesting because they do sit on spots that need to be transmuted. So if you have a cat that isn't sitting in the sun or the soft, cushy spot that they like, but it's some random place, they're very often transmuting negative energy to positive. So cats are pretty special. They're very amazing
yes.
beings.
I agree. I agree. We're going to have to get out of here. I'm sorry that I have to shut down now, but thank you so much. The information you have given us is absolutely phenomenal. It'll give anybody who's trying to manifest a jump start, active tools they can use right now. So thank you. Thank you very much for sharing.
I look forward to being with you again. And everyone, a simple prayer to stay 5D. I'm asking for a day of heaven on earth for me and everyone I come in contact with.
Excellent. Thank you. And thank you for listening. Till next time, see ya. Stay curious.